I was saying to a couple of other people that it hasn't exactly been an experience yet because the film isn't out, and that a lot of what I have to say about the experience will take me all of 5 minutes to sum up. So in an attempt to drag it out and make it something of a talk, I brought some props, and I also, but you know, as I was thinking about talking about this, there's a very fine line here between acting casual, yes, my book's being made into a film starring Uma Thurman, being so pleased with myself that people are really nauseated during lunch, but it's also nice to be asked to talk about it because in the company of writers with whom I run, it's not something they want to hear about a whole lot, you know. It was fine to mention it a couple times, but they didn't want to see my photos, for instance. So anyway, it's nice. But anyway, so I hope that I seem like I'm bragging or overly excited. But it has been exciting. But as I said, the filming has been done and wrapped up some time ago, but now the movie is in the editing process, so I guess the release will be in the fall, but no one has said that.
Who's directing him?
Vadim Perelman, who did The House of Sand and Fog. Oh,
wow.
So this is his... Uma Thurman is starring in it, and so she's the big name. I can't remember the names of the other actors, but the young woman in it is Evan Rachel Wood, who she was in 13 and a few other things like that. So, I guess my theme for my talk about this experience, which again makes it not that exciting for a talk, is just how uninvolved I, at least, maybe other people have had a different kind of experience. I, at least, have been with the production of this movie based on my book. Were you going to say something, or are you just agreeing?
Sure.
I'll start at the beginning. My first novel, Suspicious River, was made into a film, but it was a Canadian film director, and I didn't even know. I knew that it had been optioned for a very small amount of money, and that this film director in Canada was interested in doing it. And then the rights sold, so I got a larger sum of money, and that was fine. But still, I didn't know that the movie. And I sort of assumed, well, of course, when they begin filming, they're going to call me and ask for my input, and ask me to visit the set. But then I just went to the mailbox one day, and I had a videotape in my mailbox, and the film was done. And anyway, it's Suspicious River, and you would not have seen it. It went to video very quickly. And when we got the video in the mail, I said to my husband, we can watch this, but if at any point I say I'm not watching anymore, I don't want any pressure to watch, because my book had been on tape before, and I tried to listen to about 2 minutes of it, and it was so unnerving to me to hear this woman's voice reading my book that I didn't even want it on the shelf. So I assumed it would be the same case with this, especially since just after I got the videotape, I called my agent and said, did you get this videotape? And she said, I just turned it off. It's awful. So I thought, oh, no. But what? I guess maybe her taste in movies and mine, maybe hers is a little better or something, because I rather enjoyed it. But it is one slow movie. I mean, it's especially my novel, Suspicious River, is from the point of view of a prostitute. And if you can make a slow movie, well, her first film, Lynn Stopkowich, is the director, and I certainly don't mean to slam her because she did, this for me. Her first movie was based on a story by Barbara Gowdy, a Canadian writer, and it's about a necrophiliac, and that movie was also very slow. So if you can make a really slow movie about a necrophiliac, you can make a total sleeper about a prostitute. So this one was, and I thought it was quite beautifully filmed. It was filmed in Vancouver, and the guy who was the cinematographer for The Sweet Hereafter. I mean, that was the cinematographer. And that was the one really great thing about it, is just sort of the trees and the... But it also, I mean, this does not glue you to the screen, the trees. I like the trees, but... But anyway, I haven't watched it again, but I'll pass it around. Again, no one has ever asked me to talk about this sort of thing before. So I'm a little... So anyway, I mean, I had nothing to do with that and, you know, have never met the director or anything like that. But then after the book The Life Before Her Eyes came out, it was optioned by Vadim Perelman, who, you know, himself, I guess this is a sort of an unusual thing where the director himself options. It's usually a production company. But he, you know, clearly he had done The House of Sand and Fog. That's, I think, going to be his thing. He adapts books. That's what he's interested in doing. And so I knew that, you know, and I was happy, but, you know, I've known plenty of writers who have had things optioned and nothing came of it. So I didn't think about it. I didn't spend a whole lot of time thinking about it. And then years and years passed. The option was renewed. At one point, they renewed the option for him for nothing, because his wife had divorced him and taken everything, I guess. So he had no money, but they gave him 6 months without anything, you know. And I would just say there were not a lot of movie directors breathing down my agent's neck to get the option on this book. And then it was a year ago, right around this time of year, I had an email saying Uma Thurman has taken the lead in the film, and they're going to start filming in August. So then things got more exciting, and then I started, and even still, I'm not an optimist about anything anyway. I just, you know, I that would be nice. Wouldn't that be nice if that happened? But let's also not tell anybody, because I don't want to be the person whose book was going to be made into a movie starring Uma Thurman for the rest of my life. and who went around chortling about it. And so I just forgot about that. And then August came, and indeed, people started letting me know, they were going to film. They did film most of it in Connecticut and specifically in New Haven. And so I know people in New Haven who said it's in the paper that they're, you know, gonna, that Uma Thurman's coming here and they're going to film your book. What's this about? And I said, well, you know, I guess so. And then then it started to seem like, well, maybe I'm so much of a pessimist that this has become ridiculous that I won't even say anything to anybody because I'm sure that this is all going to fall through. And you probably know, or maybe it's not always this way, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to get paid the purchase price for the movie until the day they started filming. Right. So that, to me, that was the day, you know, when I get that check,
then it's real.
Well, about 3 days before that day was supposed to occur, somebody else sent me an email saying, I saw that the director, Vadim Perelman, was just arrested in New Haven, and he's in jail. And indeed, he had been. He was exonerated. Or maybe there was some community service involved. He apparently got drunk and got in a fight in a bar. But I thought, so it's good that I didn't tell anybody. But he got out. He got out in time to start filming the day that he was supposed to film. And I got, and then the most exciting thing of all is I got a rather large sum of money in the form of a check, which I took to the U of M credit union, you know, and I took it back. And I thought, it's going to seem strange, you know, this person who's been coming in here, you know, getting $5 out of the bank for the last 20 years, you know, with this large check. I'm just going to act like it's no big deal. So I went in and I handed it to the woman. You know, I was going to open up a special account, and I went to hand it to the woman, and she looked at it, and I thought she was looking at it thinking, good Lord, but she was looking at it, she said, this check isn't signed. So anyway, I went back, I made a quick phone call, they did a direct deposit, they forgot to sign the check. So Anyway, but that was a it was really odd. I don't think I've ever gone in with an unsigned check before, but in that amount, it probably seemed very fishy. And then also, I thought that woman really eyeballed me when I came back and went to a different person. I did cross. I might have just signed the check, but then I didn't do that. But I went to another person when the direct deposit had been made. So after that, they started filming, and the only involvement that I had, because no one asked me, they sent me a copy of the screenplay, and I have to say, I mean, I have yet to really read the screenplay, because I don't even know how to read a screenplay. I went through, in the book, there is a cat, and the cat's name is Timmy, and I named the cat after my friend's cat, and that was the first thing she said when I got the screenplay. She said, go through it and see if Timmy's still in. And Timmy's still in. And they use all the same names. And as far as I can tell, there's one change in setting. There's been a forest now instead of a zoo, a scene. But otherwise, it seems to me to be, at least on the page, my novel. But it's... it's a strange novel to have made into a film, I think, because it has a back and forth sort of narrative, dual narrative.
What was it about?
Well, it's about a school shooting. It starts with a school shooting, and then it flashes forward to one of the girls who was we don't know until the end, victim or not of the school shooting. It's many years later. She's 40. I like to think that the novel is somewhat about redemption and penance and, dealing with the past and the influence of the past on the present and the life of this 40-year-old woman. anyway, it's got a strange back and forth narrative. So I'll be as surprised and as anybody else if they can pull it off. It is a win-win situation for me in that, they didn't make me do anything. So I say, look what they did to my book. If it's bad, if it's good, I can take credit for it. So, but I did, this is sort of the idea. I have a photo of my son with Uma Thurman. We went to, and I'll pass it around. I was really hoping that in person she would, I'd say, oh, see, it's just on film. She's really not that beautiful. She's really that beautiful. I thought, well, And as a matter of fact, they have, maybe you've been involved in filmmaking and that sort of thing before, but they do have stand-ins, so that the stars can go rest while they set up the shoots and stuff. And there, this woman who, like Uma Thurman, who she was her stand-in, also 6 feet tall with blonde hair down to her waist, weighing, 40 pounds or something like that, dressed up beautifully. But it's just the most cursory of glances at her, somehow she just wasn't as beautiful as Uma Thurman. I mean, she was probably, if she walked down the street here, people would be gasping and staring, but next to Uma Thurman, she just wasn't as beautiful. I don't know why. There's just something. She's got something. So when I saw it in person, my son, of course, had no idea who Uma Thurman was. He's never seen 11. He's never seen anything with her. And he was just sort of like, is it okay if I take a picture? And he was just, he just looked sort of smug. But I would say that was the really lovely thing about going to the film. I don't know that I would have gone if I didn't have him to go with, because I thought they seemed nervous when I arrived, like maybe other writers had come to film sets and made a scene and or something, which is the last thing on my mind. They were so nice to him. They, sat him up in the director's chair, Vadim next to him, of course, it drew huge crowds. This is a picture of a crowd. Everybody was staring at Uma Thurman, who all we really saw her do was cross the street several times.
Where was this?
In New Haven. Right? Mm-hmm. But every time she would cross the street and cross back, the crowd would clap afterwards. We got there at 9 o'clock in the morning and left at 5 o'clock, and there were plenty of people just on the street who stayed for the whole time just for these quick glimpses. Yeah. So anyway, and then here's my son. He has a sneaky look on his face, just sitting next to Uma Thurman, who is smoking like a chimney between scenes, I'd say. So it was it was exciting. And here's Vadim Perlman, the director, looking like someone who you would arrest in a bar, sitting next to my son at lunch.
Is this the right crowd for your son?
You know, we weren't there long enough for a bad. but anyway, as I mentioned, somebody sent me from the New Haven thing. But he had no idea who Uma Thurman was. It was just all the same to him. And
I'm teasing.
And he's never seen Uma Thurman in a movie. Every once in a while, you know, she's in those watch ads in the New Yorker, and so I'll point that out. Then, Jack, honey, look, who's that? Uma Thurman. So that's, you know, that's sort of the story of it. We'll see what happens. I have a good agent and agency for this sort of thing.
Well,
Lisa Bankoff at ICM is my agent, and then of course ICM has an LA thing, yeah. And they've sold the, and it is one of those things too. I mean, whether anything else will ever happen, but there was a noticeable uptick in interest in making, you know, books into films of mine. One of those things where you have to have experience to get this job, but you can't get this job without experience, and you know, you have to have published to publish. And so Be Mine is my new novel. That's been optioned, and the writer Brett Easton Ellis is writing the screenplay, I guess. So we'll see. I mean, they could happen, but I
mean another book.
and another book of mine, the woman who did The Wedding Planner, has written the screenplay, and I guess it's set to go. So we'll see.
Pierce Brosnan is the
name. Pierce Brosnan was nowhere to be seen, and his name seemed to be a real sore subject when we brought it up. So he is not in it. No. And if he had been anyway, it would have been a 2-minute part. There's a husband in there, but he's, you know.
So you credit your agent with that kind of access?
Yes, I think so. And I think that, and then I would also say, I think. Maybe my novels have some appeal among, you know, filmmakers in that, you know, mostly I write poetry. I'm a poet, and when I first decided to write a novel, one of the reasons I chose to write it from the point of view of a prostitute was because what I'm really interested in is language and, I like describing things. I like the woods. I like the trees and that sort of thing. And then, and I had tried to do that in short fiction, but nobody wants to read that for 200-300 pages. So I thought, I'll choose something sensational. I'll write about something sensational. So since then, you know, my second novel, has been optioned. It's been in production with a film company in France for a long time. But that one's, you know, there's a dead woman in the refrigerator in the basement, and then I had some sort of a ghost story, and a horrible murder takes place in my. So anyway, I mean, I think that's why they do appeal a little bit. But I'm, you know, I don't think. But other than that, I don't think I, you know, I'm not a thriller writer, so I'm not gonna have, you know, as John Grisham does, 400 people want to make a film out of my book, but there might be the odd director now and then. Yeah.
Did you work as a prostitute? Or
no, thank you, but a lot of people, you would be surprised how many people ask you that when you have...
You said you were interested in the language.
No, I did no research for that, but once you write a novel from that point of view, everybody asks you, who's read it, asks you that. So that's why I tell my students when we workshop stories, we all assume in here that everything is fictional unless the author says otherwise. We never just burst out, you know. Did you have an affair with Bill Clinton?
You seem very detached about it, you know, in terms of saying I was very calm, but how do you feel about having the title change?
This has come through after a long, long series of changes in the title in the first place, and I would say that my editor, in consultation with me, came up with the title The Life Before Her Eyes in the first place. I had originally called it May Queen, which no one liked either. So I like In Bloom, and I never was that attached to the title anyway. And they, you know, they're going to re-release the book with that as a title and that sort of thing to just try to, you know, soak up every bit of Uma essence that can, you know, come
different
our way.
Covers,
yeah,
yeah,
different cover. I'm sure she'll be on the cover, and which is so that's, you know, that's fine with me. It would have been nice if my original title had been something that had been that they could have used, but I can certainly see why they. I was never that crazy about the title myself, so.
Well, now when you write, do you write in mind with perhaps?
No.
No.
Nah, that. Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose maybe ticking back somewhere in, you know, the grim recesses, the money grubbing sort of involved. Like, who would star in this? You know. Oh, wait, I haven't even finished the first sentence yet. But so yeah, I mean, probably. But
they say when Michael Crichton writes that he's envisioning the theme park.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the college tuition or something. Yeah.
You know, Elmore Leonard, who you're doing a lot better than he did in terms of percentage of books made into film.
Well, he had more books.
Yeah, but he didn't start until
none of them got made, and for a long, long time, and so he finally adopted the motto, just cash the check.
Mm-hmm.
Forget it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm surprised you wouldn't have looked at the script. I mean, most writers...
No,
you
I did.
You look at the script.
I did. I have looked at the script. I just...
You didn't want
to read it that closely, and also I knew that they weren't gonna want any of my input, so it only...
You didn't try or want to do the screenplay.
No one asked me to, and I think it would have been a disaster. I have no idea how to write a screenplay. I have tried in the past, and it was not a good screenplay. So, to be fair, my agent read the screenplay carefully and called me and gave me her assessment, and the LA people, they called and said what they thought of it, and everybody liked it, so... You know, so nobody said, oh, you better...
Did you have to approve it, or had you totally turned over your rights?
I totally turned over my rights.
Okay.
And, you know, that'd be the last thing I was going to do, to throw myself in front of the train moving with my unsigned check on it. No. I love it.
I'd be interested to know how much of the... I mean, I'm sure the plot was changed or modified or whatever, but in terms of the actual language, that the speakers used, were they changing your sentences? And
I didn't feel so. Keeping
the language pretty much.
Uh huh. Yeah. And you know, people who read it more closely than I did said that as well. And I would say too, it was kind of, you know, this was the moving part, was this seeing Uma Thurman and then this little girl who played her daughter. Acting out the scene that really is from my novel, where she and the daughter go out for ice cream, and those were the words that I had written, and to see, you know, that was the exciting part, when I could really kind of wrap my mind around it, which was, you know, just in sort of fits and spurts, but that, you know, that they were acting out these characters that had come out of my imagination, was, you know, and that she was wearing these clothes that came out of my imagination that I had described in that way, and that was strange. And then to have a crowd of people watching them do that, I thought that, you know, that was exciting. That was.
So what do you attribute your tremendous writing ability?
I
mean, what is your background? I mean,
what? The MFA program at the University of Michigan, of which I am a graduate of.
Well, right, I know, I read that. Yeah, I mean, it's more than that.
Well, I was an only child in a, you know, snowy small town. I spent a lot of time reading, and also, you know, this was before video games, and my parents liked me to do whatever it was I could do alone in my room quietly. So for many, many years. So that, and yeah, and I don't even know if it's, you know, that it's an imagination kind of thing. You know, and then of course, when I was a kid, I got a lot of positive reinforcement for writing. It was so I knew that it was so. It was something I just focused on. It was just something that I focused on. I decided early on, I think, because of the positive reinforcement, because I had a certain kind of life and a certain kind of place. That
where did you grow up?
Grand Rapids. So. Okay. Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Lake effect snow, huh?
Yeah. So So, you know, I think that that's it, because there was there. My father was a mailman. My mom was a teacher. That might have helped. She was an elementary school teacher. She read to me constantly and that sort of thing. But nobody else was a writer, really. I did have a distant, a great uncle who was a writer, and we always heard tales of him in New York City. And I think I was intrigued by that, but he was a journalist, so I didn't, obviously I didn't go in that direction. But I don't know. I mean, I think I...
Did you write at an early age, like in high school, and stuff, write stories?
I remember in fifth grade telling everyone I was going to be a writer, and that was that. You know, so
And you have one son. You have one child.
Yes.
How old is he now?
He's 11. He has not said he wants
and
to be a writer. My husband's a dean at Washtenaw Community College.
Academic too.
Yeah.
Listen, I think it's very important. I want to coach you a little bit.
Okay.
What you need to ask for when they invite you to the premiere.
Okay. Oh, if they do, assuming they do.
You're going to get drummed out of the regiment here if you don't do this.
Okay.
Okay. You need 3 first class seats, obviously.
Okay.
Give your son your.
You are making notes.
Oh, okay. No, I'm mental notes, yeah.
You have curly hair, so your hairdresser must come along. And, of course, limos everywhere.
Yeah. Right.
And not the little
ones. Uh-huh, right, right.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the other end, I think you need at least a couple of suites at the Beverly Hills.
Okay.
One
for
your son.
You
know,
right.
And then, you know, we'll fill in the rest.
Right. Well, it'll be
exciting. You're good. Your writers are...
Well, it'll be interesting, too, to have everybody see me have gone from this, you know, sort of humble, oh, whatever, to just full of demands and where did you, you know, well, she talked to Larry Kirschbaum. She spoke to Larry Kirschbaum, and ever since then, she...
Spielberg doesn't do it.
I have a feeling it would be very easy to just, you know, let me go my way back to, you know, Michigan.
You have a great attitude, I must say.
Well, it's hard not to. I mean, maybe if I had, you know, this had all happened to me when I was 25, I'd have a slightly different, you know, attitude. But, you know.
You're 26.
But at 29, I...
Pardon? What studio is releasing it?
Well, the production company is 2929. And I don't know that they know. So...
Because sometimes things are made and they're never released.
We'll see.
I mean, the one thing I am serious, if you could do it, is to ask if there could be some kind of a benefit when the, you know, here in Ann Arbor.
Keith Taylor, I think, is looking into that. You know who Keith is? Mm-hmm. He's, you know, so. Yeah,
because that would be nice.
Yes, that would be really nice.
From time to time, authors that I've been involved in would come out here and speak, like, you know, James Ellroy did. Things like Dahlia came out and. The students really would like it too. I mean,
absolutely.
The writer, the author, talk about the film from their point of view.
Yeah.
Of course, that means you're going to have to watch it all the way.
Yes. I hope it's good.
Well, if you do something like that, let us know.
Absolutely.
You can get first class seats for all of us.
We're available.
Yeah. That's good. A lot of money out in Hollywood. Let them pay.
Jonathan, did you have a
question? I just wanted to ask you a little bit. So I always need to ask you this. So do you think of yourself as enabled by being a Michigan writer rather than, say, someone who's in New York or L.A.?
Yeah.
Or disabled by, what do you get from locating yourself here that you wouldn't get from being in powerful publishing center?
You know, what I spend most of my time doing as a writer is sitting alone in a room writing. And I see no benefit to moving the room any particular place. Unless facing the ocean would be nice. But other than that, you know, I really, I don't know. I, of course, have writer friends who live in New York City. I don't see that they're reaping any benefits from it.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, most of what they do just exactly as most of what I do, that has to do with the business end of things, is talking on the phone and sending emails. So I, being a writer, I've always felt that I could do this anywhere, you know.
You don't think of yourself at all as a regional guest writer or something?
Well, I do, not necessarily because that's what I'm choosing to do, but I do think that, I've taken the Midwest as the setting for everything, but that's partly because that's what I know, and also because what I really love to do is to describe the seasons and the sensory details around me in the physical world. So maybe if I were somewhere else, I would, you know, that would be my place, but this is my place now. And I mean, I find it pretty infinitely fascinating, and it's an interesting challenge. It's sort of nice to have, in some ways, to have chosen, well, I'm going to have this limited palette and just see what I can do with that. Not that I have anything, you know, I like to travel and that sort of thing, but I enjoy listening to the stories of people around me and reading the newspaper, thinking, oh, this would make, and especially given, you know, the Midwest as everyone regards it elsewhere, to, you know, put the mom and this family in the refrigerator in the basement and then spin it out.
Do you struggle when you write?
Oh,
you know how
yeah.
you read here someone and say, oh, they have so much trouble writing.
Well, I'm not a perfectionist at all, and I think that's when people have trouble, is if every time you write a sentence you look at it and think, oh, this is no good, I can't possibly go on. I don't do that. I use as sort of my model the documentary makers who take 500 hours of film to make a one-hour documentary about the turtles and that sort of thing. Well, what happened to those other 499? You know, well, those had to be there to choose from. That's the kind of writer I am. I go and go and go and go, and then I edit and then I deal with it. So in that way, I've already opted out of struggling. I just decide I'm not going to go back and look at this again until I've written the next chapter, and then I can deal with all the things that went wrong here. And also, after writing long enough, I know now, even when I do feel that I've written garbage now for a month, that's happened to me before, and I know, well, I can go back and I'll extract something from that, or I'll go somewhere from
so
that.
You're positive thinking.
Yeah, and I'm also pretty associative, so that's when the writing process is interesting for me, is one idea leads to another idea to another idea, and so I'm not a chiseler, and plus I have poetry, and this, I'm talking about fiction when I say this. With poetry, I can fiddle and obsess and try to, you know, break a line 400 different ways before I decide that it's okay. So I have this other arena to
get
picky. Are
you concerned about running out of ideas?
Not really. I kind of am of the school of if you can't see something interesting in under every time you look around, there's something wrong with you, you know, not. So I hope, that would be bad. That would be the worst thing. I think that's not the worst thing that could ever happen to me, but many worse things could happen to me, but that would be the worst writing thing that could happen to me, I think. That would, and I do remember feeling just this sort of sinking sadness hearing William Maxwell in an NPR interview, but he was 90, I think, at the time or older, saying, I don't write anymore. I don't know. I don't think in stories. I'm just thinking, wow, you know. But that would be the worst writing turn to take. But so far, I don't feel that way.
How has the success, first as a novelist and now as a someone whose work is clearly translates to the screen in some, you know, fairly fluid fashion, how has that affected the poetry?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's hard for me to have that kind of perspective myself. I don't know. I don't think that it's affected it that much. Writing poetry and writing fiction are very, very different for me. And so, and of course, the world of poetry, the poetry I read, and the poetry I'm interested in is so far from Hollywood. You can't get farther from Hollywood than the poetry.
Really awkward for movies.
Yeah, very rarely. So I don't think it's...
Is it in any way displacing the poetry in terms of time or attention or anything like that?
I don't think so, because I have been writing novels for a while now, and if I were told I could only write one or the other, I would definitely want to write poetry. So... But one of the reasons that I like to write novels, and that I think I ever started in the first place, to write a poem takes a particular kind of energy for me. I mean, I feel like it already has to be kind of nagging at me, and then everybody has to be out of the house, and I have to, you know, get it right within a certain period of time or just forget it. And novel writing is nothing like that for me. I mean, really, after the dishes are done and the kids in bed, I can turn on the computer and work on a novel for half an hour while I'm very tired. But I can't say, oh, I'm going to go write a poem now.
That's impossible.
I do. I try to. I mean, there are plenty of days that go by that I don't, but that's my goal. I don't really have any other kind of writing plan except that I'm going to try to write every day.
What do you teach here?
Well, I teach in the MFA program and also in the residential college, and I'm teaching writing. I writing workshops.
The residential college is undergrad, correct?
Yes, yeah. And I teach writing tutorials in a fiction writing class over there, and I've also taught a first-year seminar over there.
What is your relationship with your editor?
Well, my editor is Ann Patty now at Harcourt. Do you know her? So, I love her. I don't, you know, we've met in person one time. So, but she's been very helpful to me. I also, I probably, because of my writing, she probably wouldn't say this, but I think as a human being, I'm very easy to edit because I take suggestions. I'm not brimming with self-confidence or anything, so I rarely argue for anything. She's been a great editor for me because I really trust her, and she's had great ideas for me.
BC Andrews.
The rumor is, I've never asked her this, that she wrote. After B.C. Andrews died.
The woman in the refrigerator.
Right, yes. Yeah. She's pretty much, she doesn't want you to bring up B.C. Andrews to her. I don't think that's the impression I get. So.
Well, B.C. Andrews continued to write long after her death.
And I guess that, and I think that might have been Aunt Patty.
Very helpful.
Yeah. So strange. Have you worked with her?
Yeah.
As well? Yeah.
She's very creative too. She had, I think, a real cancer.
Right. And no, has done so well.
She's a legend in the business.
Yeah.
It's great. It's good. I'm sure she loves working with you.
Well, I'm easy to work with. Now I'll change my attitude.
Yeah, you want one of those packages with all the stuff in it, like these vacation
right.
Right. 3 weeks in Tahiti or Thailand, right?
Yeah.
Well, I can see now, though, just in the last couple of months trying to fly places to do various readings, how people become demanding about that. I mean, I could see now saying, you know, I want someone to sit with me until my plane takes off. No one will, but that's these other celebrity demands. But I could really see saying, I sat in Rochester, New York for 6 hours while planes were canceled. And then last week I was to go to Austin. I'm going instead next week. And I flew to Chicago and turned around and flew back home because the plane I was going to take, it was arriving too late for me to do. They had to reschedule everything anyway. So I could see saying, I want an entourage at the airport, you know, with smelling salts and, you know. That would be better.
Oh, wow, this is wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Will you sign our...
I'd be thrilled.
Yeah, good luck.
Can we come up and stand in line?
Or I could come around, actually.
I have to ask Melissa whether